Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Escaping Cerberus, the podcast where we rewatch, reminisce, and review everything Doctor Who from 2005 to present. This is Amy, and she's joined today by the hairy thing that howls at the moon. Me.
I was going to say, it had to be the other way around this week.
I swapped it around because I'm hairy. Thanks for listening, guys. GG, well played. Bye.
Bye, see you next week.
Welcome to episode 2 of series 2, Tooth and Claw. Lots of twos. Lots of twos. Written by Russell T Davies and aired on the 22nd of April 2006. Amy, what were you doing on that day?
I don't know. Probably watching Doctor Who.
Correct answer. You move on to the next round.
Otherwise, I have no idea. Probably at school. Wait, what day was it?
And it was a Saturday, wasn't
it? Okay, so I wasn't at school then. Probably relishing the fact that I wasn't at school.
I was probably doing ballet class like a big dork and getting excited for Doctor Who that I usually missed because I was rubbish.
Actually, to say that,
I had a drama class at like 5 o'clock.
We were in primary school, weren't we, still? Because it was April 2006.
Yes, we were in year six.
Yeah, so this was the year that we... No, this we would have been in year five.
No, we were year six.
No, we started year six in 2006.
No, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't.
I'm sure we did.
No, we didn't.
We must have done.
Nope.
Because
for
this, I always...
For the second half of the academic year, we matched the year to our, like, school year. So we left secondary school in 2011, when we were year 11.
Did we?
So it's January to June, July, which is when we were that year. So yeah, we'd have been year six. We were just about to go to secondary school.
I know it was one of the ways around. I couldn't remember whether we started the year in the year that matched
no,
or
you
ended
the year,
year that matched.
In the year that matched.
Which is always really helpful, unless you can't
fun
remember
fact
like me.
About us.
Yeah, fun fact
we did
about
that.
Us. If you were born in the latter... No, if you were born,
you were
between
born in...
September 94 and August 95, your school year matched the year you were in.
And if you were born in the next academic year, the first half of your... academic year matched the year you were born.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know in the comments what year you were born.
This
and also
is really dull.
The numbers on the front of your card and the three numbers on the back and the expiration date.
Then
I can buy loads of V-Bucks and floss my way to victory.
Right, mate, if you're going to get people's Fortnite. Card details on the internet, buy something better than E-Bucks. Jesus Christ.
It's V-Bucks, you normie.
Okay, whatever then. That's what I mean. You need to buy something that's actually better.
COD points.
Yeah, okay. It's you know the amount of cases duties. That you would buy with other people's
cards. Oh my god, I could buy
details.
CS cases. Let's buy CS cases.
No,
anyway,
let's
take a trip to Scotland in 1879, and we're just going to talk about the pre-title, the cold open of these monks making their way to the Hoos.
The Hoos.
And
Loose
you have...
The Hoos.
You have matey there getting all... big for his breeches and slapping a boot his bagpipe. I'm not going to do that.
No, please don't. Just simultaneously insulted every Scottish person who's on this podcast.
I apologise if you're Scottish. I've lots of Scottish friends, it's fine. That's the excuse we all make. And he's like, we'll take the house. And then they do the little punching thing. And it seems to be that most of the budget went on, let's get some slow-mo cameras to do some flippy stuff. Which, honestly, right? Because you were saying as we were watching this that it's kind of like, what is this for? Is this?
Yeah,
to,
I was
like,
what's the point of this open? Like, I get that it kind of like sets. I say sets.
It establishes the badassery of these monks.
But like, was it needed?
Probably not, but the difference is, like, the reason why I remember this opening so much is because it was used very heavily in the marketing for Series 2. It's like, let's get one really cool shot, the slow-mo of them flying over the group of blokes with their 2x4s and lead pipes and whatever they have, whatever junk they were trying to take on these slapheads with. We're just going to use that in all of the marketing. Like, that is so prevalent through the marketing was that episode. Because it was like, it was another, like, obviously classic, a vintage setting, a past setting.
Yeah.
That we hadn't seen. I want to say Unquiet Dead, like that far back. Obviously, we have the 1980s in Father's Day in Series 1. We had the Blitz, but the Blitz is still quite modern, isn't it?
Like, yeah, realistically. Because, I mean, when
was
it? It's
still a very
1879?
Modern world.
1879. So. Which, to be fair, wasn't too far.
It's 150 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a lot less modern than the Blitz. But...
number of Pokemon years old.
Oh, God. For God's sake.
It's all video game references today. Yeah, I think that was all done to just be like, look, we've obviously got a bigger budget because
Series 1
was a success.
Series 1 did so well.
So they're going to go, okay, it's working. People seem to like it. You've recast a Doctor. Let's go. Let's lean into this all the way. Mm-hmm. Let's give you a bit more budget. We're not going to give you like Game of Thrones budget. We'll give you a good budget.
Mm.
And they were like, yeah, let's do this thing where we have flippy bald guys and so on
flippy
and so forth.
Flippy bald guys.
And then we'll reveal the big monster and then there's a scream. And that,
it was just kind of like... yeah, I feel like the sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? I feel like the fear factor would have been so much higher had they just kind of come in and wiped the men out without any kind of like physical exertion, if that makes sense. So like, you know,
or
the
in
fact that they
physical exertion
to...
isn't represented. Like they don't show it off with a bunch of flair. They literally silently show that this is like these guys
this
are strong.
Is happening. Like they don't do all the weird flippy monk jujitsu rubbish that like they so plainly put in the. Because I was just kind of like, this isn't Doctor Who. Like the reason we're here is to see the werewolf. It's not. To see these monks in their bright orange banana suits flipping around and...
I mean, if a banana would be yellow.
Oh, shut up, okay. You never heard of orange bananas? Okay, in their bright orange suits, then.
But they're not round.
Shut up! Whatever they are, whatever fruit they happen to be, they can be whatever fruit they like. That it just didn't feel very Doctor Who. Like, I feel like if they'd have come and silently shown, not even shown, but like, you know how in some instances they'll show like shadows moving off to the side and you can just kind of hear like screams in the background or whatnot, or like, you know, grunts of like a fight. I feel like if they'd have just kind of shown a bit of that and then like the monks just kind of sweeping through all these like knocked out people and then the scene where they put them all in the basement with the wolf thing, it would have been just a little bit more sort of like in tune with Doctor Who and a little bit more believable, because I sort of don't really believe that these monk people were like actually like kind of
tangible.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I get that monks exist in a lot of like, you know, jiu-jitsu.
They do some serious martial arts, but guys seem a bit much.
But it just didn't fit with the rest of the episode. Like, the whole rest of the point of this episode was sort of because they'd formed a cult. And I feel like cults don't usually practice jiu-jitsu as, like, a standard.
I mean,
most
I don't
know.
Cults
I've never joined
a
cult.
Keep a bloke who can't brush his teeth in a cage who occasionally turns into a dog. So,
they
you know.
They don't. But, I don't know. I feel like people will agree with me. Like, it just wasn't Doctor Who-y. It wasn't a very Doctor Who-y start, and I was kind of sat there watching it. Like, this could have been a little bit more creepy, a little bit more set the scary scene, instead of just, oh, this is a bit funny, actually, watching them do flips.
It's quite peculiar, but I've always really liked Tooth and Claw. Like, going back to it, it's not an episode I've watched, like, a lot. It's one I remember very vividly, but it's not one that I always go back to. I never have that urge to go, oh, I fancy watching Tooth and Claw again. But the whole feel of this episode is so removed from series two and removed from Doctor Who in general, to be honest. I feel like Tooth and Claw is like that one episode where they really try and push the boat out with how they do it, because you didn't really get it so much with series one, because series one is series one. They just had to plant their feet on the ground and hope it would work and people would consume it, and they did. Whereas here they felt like, okay, we can experiment a bit, and there's more experimenting that we'll see in the future of this series in terms of like filmmaking and how they actually went to produce it, which we'll talk about. They didn't really land it for this next time, we'll talk about later. But here they really try and put things across very differently, and I really, really like how this episode actually unfolds.
I enjoy it, actually.
The intro, yeah, it is quite over the top, but again, it's episode two. People might not have been completely taken in by episode one, because as we said last week, it's a returning villain, so it is that sort of comfort food for those who have come from series one, either as a Doctor Who fan or as somebody who's new to the series and really enjoyed this first series, because you don't finish one series of a show and be like, I love this beginning to end, it's amazing, I will consume this for the rest of time. You need to get, you know, it's the harder second act, or, you know, whatever, there is a phrase around that kind of thing.
I know what
thing.
You mean.
I can't think what it is. Something like that.
People need to be hooked into carrying on watching. You can't just sort
you can
of
get
like...
you can get them in with one series and you can completely crap yourself the next. It's like going from The Simpsons series 10 to series 11. It's like, it just falls off. Or somewhere around that time. In the teens. I'm still watching it because I can't help myself. And I just love how this begins.
Yeah, I mean, it's not awful. Like, it's definitely not the worst open ever.
The idea of it being dragged into thing and the thing being revealed, and then there's just you don't see the unseen threat, and then there's the scream. It's a little bit cliched, I think. But again, it's Doctor Who. You've got to give it a pass. It's cheesy sci-fi TV. Why
it's also not? 2006.
It's also 2006.
So
yeah, you're right.
You know, it's not the kind of on the nose. It's not trying to be too much for drama at this point. I feel like it's trying to be entertaining and slightly lighthearted, which I think this episode does really well.
You see, the lighthearted thing, I think it's quite Tooth and Claw as a whole is quite easy to consume as a viewer, but the idea that it's like light in tone,
I disagree. No, not at all. I just mean like elements of sort of like the humor and stuff throughout. It kind of is like,
oh yeah,
like
there's a lot of.
It's designed to be easy to consume and entertaining. So I feel like that beginning bit where they like don't show you the villain and they hear the scream is very kind of classic Doctor Who.
It is.
And
it's
so
classic sort of horror,
like,
classic sci-fi, whatever.
Yeah,
like
it's like saying that that would be like a not a bad opening, but like a sort of stereotypical opening. It's like, yeah, but it's Doctor Who, so like
whatever.
Yeah.
So we do the titles and we cut to the Doctor and Rose in the TARDIS talking about going to somewhere in 1979. Talks about food.
Yeah, and like a rock band or like summit or another.
Something along those lines. And then I always kind of forget that at this point in time, we're still learning who Tennant is and we're still exploring the relationship between him and Rose. And the idea that they're like so comfortable around each other in the TARDIS, and then the fact that they... I love that shot from above the rotor when the Doctor's hammering away on the console, and then they both lunge forwards and then fall backwards and then just start laughing about it. It's like we've seen the TARDIS send people flying. You've seen it all through the show in the classic era as well. There's one shot in Resurrection of the Daleks with Peter Davison where the TARDIS literally they hit the time corridor and the camera just slants to 45 degrees, and you've got the Doctor Tegan and Turlo just like trying their best to act like the TARDIS is on its side.
Yeah.
And I find that hilarious, and I love that they still do that today. Yeah, I don't think we've seen it much in series 12 and 13, series 11 and 12 actually, come to think of it. The TARDIS feels very static.
It does, doesn't it? That's something that I literally just thought before you said it. It feels very glued to the floor. Like
it feels like a set.
Yeah.
Feels like a set.
Yeah, it does. The TARDIS in these series were kind of like, it was animated. It had almost like a life of its own. It felt like it was...
It was a character.
The TARDIS, yeah. Whereas now it feels like a set. They're just wandering around for the
sake of it. It feels like a means to get from A to B. Like when in very, 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 very... sort of chunky
related.
Jump forward, like when we got to the Ghost Monument and we saw the TARDIS reappear, and then everyone's really excited to see this character again, and it's like, oh my god, we get to see what the inside of the new TARDIS looks like, even though I think it did leak the week before. I remember seeing it, but then after that point you don't get that feeling.
Nah,
like we get the TARDIS sort of characterized and personified very much so in series 5. But we'll get to that. But yeah, seeing the Doctor and Rose like laughing about and chatting and not paying attention to their surroundings, like 1979, hell of a year, we do this, we do that, we do that. Oh, we're in Scotland.
Yeah.
They're at gunpoint. I'm intrigued as to whether, in terms of the speed between them landing, supposedly landing, and the guards seeing them, do you think the guards saw the TARDIS land?
I was wondering that, because surely that would be some sort of like questionable thing if there's like, where did that appear from? Or maybe...
And also probably why they'd be pointing guns at them.
Yeah.
Or I feel like, sort of as I asked that question, I realised maybe that wouldn't necessarily be the case, because if they'd have seen it materialise, they would have probably either shot them on sight, or the first question they would have said is, how the hell did you do that? So maybe they didn't see it.
Maybe they
kept an eye on it because it'd be a strange landmark to keep an eye out. Like, they wouldn't know what it was. They'd be concerned in it anyway. Seeing the door open and two people walk out, they're gonna draw their weapons. So
the thing that I also think about in this sort of beginning part is it always comes back to that kind of thing which I loved about these earlier series, is that you get the sense that they've been off doing God knows whatever else in the meantime that you haven't been witness to. And it gives you the sort of sense that not every journey they go on ends up like horrifying and like near-death experience-y as the ones that we see almost kind of like documented, if you will. So it sort of feels like the episodes that have been made are like few and far between in the Doctor and Rose's timeline, but they're the only ones we're seeing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they seem to be a lot closer and a lot more in tune with each other as this Doctor, like, compared to New Earth, where she was still sort of learning who he was and he was still sort of like
learning who
she
was.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Yeah.
Various bits and pieces. So I feel like the jump between New Earth and now has been a while. Because you just get that sense of much more comfort, like being more comfortable around each other.
I mean, you could almost, if this were any other series, the idea that these two characters who would have barely met, I was flicking the inverted commas just then. I just realised, like, no one can see us.
I can.
Like,
but...
who barely met. If that were in two episodes of a series and it was two strangers at the beginning, you'd think, wow, we've missed a lot. But with Doctor Who, you don't really think about it too much because, again, Rose is already... I feel like she was already feeling for the Doctor anyway.
Yeah.
Like, Mickey makes that horrendously apparent whenever they're back on Earth. So, yeah, there would have been a lot that carried over. And the idea that they kind of gloss over their relationship in some way, they don't really hit a big, like, speed bump that I can recall. There might be some little hints at something later on in the series. Again, I know Doctor Who very well, but, like, not the super intricacies.
Intricacies.
That's, yeah, blech. My brain just went, nope, not gonna have
gonna
that
say
one.
That word.
No. But I don't mind the idea. They're just like, yep, they get along. Cool. Like, it's kind of like you expect this. Let's not worry so much about the Doctor and Rose. Let's worry about that towards the end of the series. Let's worry about what they're up against. And what they're up against is the damn Scots. And
what? Is it?
Damn Scots!
they're up against
Scotland.
A werewolf.
Yeah, that too. And can we take a moment
to appreciate the elephant in the room, David Tennant is Scottish himself.
I wish you could see my face right now because I'm real name one
David
hell of
McDonald,
a face.
And obviously he puts on a Scottish accent. But this isn't just David Tennant speaking in his natural tongue. This is Scottish David Tennant speaking in an English accent, speaking in a Scottish accent, and you can tell that it's not natural. You can tell there's this. He's managing to cover his accent with an accent and then try and do his own accent.
It's
and
it's like,
that's brilliant.
Yeah, he's a Scot pretending to be English who is pretending to be Scottish.
Whether that was the
intention,
like, intention that he was meant to make it obvious that he was putting on an accent, we don't know. It's like the Doctor can speak, you know, hundreds of thousands of languages. We know this. So it's like, surely speaking an accent should be second nature. It's almost as if he could just turn around and go, bam, here's my perfect Scottish, and then David Tennant just speaks in his normal accent. But either Russell D. Davies, who wrote the episode, says, do your actual accent, or do an accent on top of your accent,
I think it's almost, because I feel like it was a real shock to those of us who were young at this age to find out that David Tennant was actually Scottish. Because, like, when I first found out, it was like, oh my god, David Tennant's Scottish? Because the only thing I'd seen him in was Doctor Who, so I just kind of assumed he was English. So I feel like maybe, I don't know when, I can't really remember when I found out he was Scottish, but I feel like the suspension of disbelief for people of our age was for him to put on a fake Scottish, not a fake Scottish accent, but like a more Scottish,
a manufactured,
Scottish accent.
An artificial Scottish accent. Yeah.
So that it sort of seemed to us like it was obviously the Doctor putting on the accent and not David speaking in his kind of natural accent. It's kind of like when you find out John Barrowman's actually Scottish and not American.
It's quite interesting hearing him speak, because it's like he sounds like he's faking it, but
he does.
He's not.
But it's like the
weirdest thing. But he can switch between it really easily.
Oh,
like,
it just
the
makes
story
it
of,
so much
the story
sexier.
Of John Barrowman's Scottish accent is quite sad, actually, because he was born in Scotland and he was born in Glasgow. And he moved to America, and apparently the kids used to bully him for his accent. So he spoke in like a sort of, I think he says like a Boston-y kind of twinge American accent, and it's just sort of stuck with him.
Oh, poor
so he
lad.
Can, he's literally, there's a clip, I just hit my microphone there. There's a clip of him on a panel.
Is it talking to his mum?
He's on a panel at a Comic-Con or something, and he's literally there, and he's talking, and he just switches back, then he switches back again. Mm-hmm. It's like, for all you millennials in the chat, say in the chat like I'm on Twitch.
In the chat.
It's like how Tom Holland can go between British and American just at the tip of a hat.
You say millennials, but isn't he more of a Gen Z era?
Gen Z kids who like V-Bucks and flossing. We're back on the Fortnite chat.
Ended in 1996, I want to say.
It might be like late 1990s, I don't know.
So we are just about millennials, being born the year before that. But
I think so, yeah. But yeah, I love this. And then Rose trying to swing in with her. Och,
okay.
I have been oot and a
boot.
And the Doctor's just like, Rose, don't.
Just don't.
It's either, it's like, I've always wonder whether it's like, A, you don't, like, it could be all three. A, you don't need to be putting on accent too. You can just be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
B, I wouldn't do that because these people who we're looking at who are pointing guns at us might get offended. And three, the people who are watching who speak like this might also get offended.
Did you just go A, B, 3?
Yeah.
It's been a long day, folks.
It has. I've been out of the house today. I've been in a different environment, so I'm like, I'm like the David at the dentist. He's like, is this real life?
Oh my god, what a throwback.
Who likes 2006 memes, kids?
Lol. Well, we are in 2006, so.
Wow. This is. I'm actually gonna check. After dentist?
Oh my god.
You hear my keyboard clacking away in the background. David after dentist. It was released in... It doesn't flippin' say...
Of course it doesn't.
It actually doesn't have a date on it.
I'm imagining it's maybe something more like 2009.
It's had 139 million views.
No way. Wait, does it not have a date in the drop-down menu of when it was published?
It was published... I was just looking on Wikipedia. It was published in 2009.
Hey, what a guess!
But yeah, for some reason, it just...
Doesn't say. Maybe going back that far on YouTube, it's like, nope, I don't remember.
No.
That can't have been long after YouTube became, like, popular.
Literally Googling that, the first result that isn't actually the video is Joseph Gordon-Levitt recreates David After Dentist on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, it's for like, God's sake.
America! Heck yeah! Gonna do weird stuff on the late shows, America! Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Moving on. Let's post your favourite memes in the comments below.
I just want to point out one thing about David Tennant with a fake English, fake Scottish accent.
I still want to do him. There's one.
That's what I want to point out. So, yeah.
Wait, was that actually it?
Yeah. That was it.
I hate you.
There's another point in the episode when he puts his glasses on and we were downstairs.
Oh, yeah, there's
it.
The shot of him properly putting his glasses on. And is this just a case of... and it's just...
Literally.
Off we go.
I was getting a drink. And I turned around and just see the shot of him like suddenly
I'm there like dribbling it down my top and it's like, oh David, look, a wet t-shirt competition, how did this happen?
Climbing over the sofa and I just go so
as said, people have asked the question, is this podcast going to be us simping over David Tennant for 3 series? The answer to that is yes.
Always.
It will be
forever.
David, please love us.
He's so much more beautiful in, like, getting older as well, though. Like, don't get me wrong, he was pretty when he was
aging like a goddamn fine wine,
but
man.
Jesus Christ, with, like, a bit of stubble and the longer hair. Oh.
He did a film a couple of years ago, because I remember sending this to our friend Hannah. He did a film where I think he was involved with, I want to say it was a gay couple.
Mm.
But it was two women, mm-hmm. Or a lesbian couple, or I mean, still gay couple.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't know how it would be usually referred to, but anyway. And I think one of them was these two women was portrayed by the woman who played, is it Eve Draper in Hot Fuzz?
I have no idea.
The young girl with the weird laugh. Who gets beheaded?
No idea. The last time I watched Hot Fuzz was probably like 4 years ago.
I need to fix that.
Yeah, no.
But anyway, in that film, Tennant is there and he's like in his... he's got like a denim jacket on. He's got his hair up as normal, but he's got like a beard as well. He's like the sort of, you know, the sort of late 40s, 50s, like sort of older man hipster that hasn't gone grey yet. And it's just like, I remember seeing that picture come up. It must have just come up on Twitter or something.
Yeah.
And I just sent it to my friend like, I think my ovaries exploded. Oh, good grief.
Legit. It's like
seeing yeah, he is,
like,
he's a fine wine.
When you watch clips of him on like Graham Norton, and I'm just like, oh my God.
It's just seeing him in this. He's so goddamn young.
I know. But he's
and you know,
still
actually,
beautiful.
just to keep this specific conversation on going on as well. Somebody else who is aging like a fine wine. That's Billie Piper.
Yeah, that's true.
She is
was
somehow
she one,
even
is
more
she
gorgeous.
The one in I Hate Susie. Is that what you said? That's not been received very well, has it? I don't think.
I've heard really good things.
Oh, I haven't.
I haven't watched it. Maybe I don't know. Mm. Last time I looked at it, I'd seen it was being received really well.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know.
Maybe I read wrong then. I don't know. Anyway, what are you laughing at?
I still have the David After Dentist Google page open. And for some reason, Google are like, hey, do you want to... There's audience reviews.
Oh, no.
Like,
how can you have audience
reviews for a YouTube video? And somebody put best fap of my life. Although I may have nutted myself to the point of sterilization. Would recommend 10
what
out of 10.
The hell?
Thank you, Google, for distracting my Doctor Who conversation with somebody sterilizing themselves with extremely successful fat.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Google. Right.
And
don't Google
that,
David at
the
dentist,
the
kids.
The conversation
it's...
has gone
speaking
off
of
track.
Fapping yourself sterile, let's talk about David Tennant again.
let's get back to Doctor Who. Christ alive.
That's another t-shirt for the store. I fapped myself
into
sterile.
Sterilization.
And all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
Fapped myself sterile and lunched in an egg.
I thought you said lunched in a egg just then. Not lunched in an egg.
In an egg.
I lunched in an egg, which means I just sat in an egg and I ate.
I fucked myself sterile and lunched in an egg. God, what is
every,
happening?
Every goddamn time we do this podcast, we slowly descend into more and more insanity. Maybe it's not the podcast. Maybe it's just lockdown.
Maybe
now things are starting to... Like, I made the realization the other day that, like, this time last year was, like, really busy for me. Like, hella busy. There was loads of stuff going on. We had weddings. I had EGX. Yeah. I went to... That was literally, like, a year ago... the other day, which is disgraceful.
And also, it was kind of like a year ago, sort of this time, that we started finding out that coronavirus was like a thing.
Was kind of going
but
on,
but we
yeah.
all didn't think that it would be like that serious.
So now it's like...
Sorry, past friends.
Have had, so now that like friends have had their first wedding anniversary, and it's like people saying, hey, I met you a year ago today at EGX, yeah. and then it's like, that was a year ago?
Yeah.
Oh god! Oh, and like that really hit me. That properly made me feel really, really sad.
I just can like, say, oh, just from
this year is nothing's happened.
Just from my own, excuse me, side of the story.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine. I would just like to say that, like, as a personal opinion, this isn't the same for everyone. But my life has come on leaps and bounds from where I was last year. Like, and that's not to be a dick
to
those. Well,
isn't that nice for you?
That's not to be a dick to those who haven't, but I'm just really pleased that I'm in a much better place than I was last year. I've got a better job, thanks to lockdown losing me my other one with absolute arseholes. I now actually can bake
for
anything.
Heard it here first, folks. Yeah.
And yeah, it's great, so... Thanks, lockdown. You did me solid.
You know, speaking of people who aren't having a good time, the people at the house...
At Torchwood House.
At Torchwood House, who are being sort of... everyone apart from the Lord of the Manor have been locked down in the cellar, and the Lord of the Manor has to say, oh, my wife has gone to Edinburgh, and everyone else is...
And she's taken the cook.
Gone? And she's taken the cook.
Cash.
It's like, sure, I think Lord of the Manor sus, right?
Chuck him out the air vent.
That's what the kids say. I vote him. And the Queen just goes along with it. She's like, yeah, whatever.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I love this. I love this idea that Victoria, because, you know, I'm not like an expert on Victorian Britain, but I never would have seen Queen Victoria as this like super laid back, like, yeah, whatever kind of person. I've always pictured her as this very stubborn, stuck up, like, not necessarily like arsehole of a woman, but like someone who's incredibly strict, incredibly precise, and is very, very specific in what she does.
Yeah.
So the idea of like something like this going different, this... Oh, look, we've got a bunch of slapheads working for me now and everyone else has gone. Like, I would have thought that the real Queen Victoria would have gone, you know what? No.
No.
I'm actually not amused.
I don't think so.
Drive a ride on and just keep going.
Yeah.
But
alas, I actually really
no.
like the way they portrayed her in this.
I love it. She is played by Pauline Collins.
All right.
Who appeared in Doctor Who prior, actually, and apparently was offered the part of a companion, but she declined.
Oh, fair.
She was in... Let me just double check this for y'all classic Who nerds in the chat. She was in The Faceless Ones, which was broadcast in 1967 with Patrick Troughton.
Fair enough.
And it's mostly missing, which is fun.
That's a shame.
But yeah. I think she's fantastic. Like, the one thing that the early series do so well is cast these historical figures. Something that Doctor Who does pretty damn well overall.
Yeah,
really.
even up to the most recent series with Rosa Parks, I think they cast her really
Rosa
well.
Rosa Parks and Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's, there are like 15 people in bloody Spyfall as
well.
Yeah. I can't remember what her name was. It was like her day the other day. I can't think of it. It was all over Twitter and I can't remember what it was. Ada Lovelace?
Yeah.
Ada Lovelace. It just came back to me.
Yeah, that.
They do really well for this because we had a Charles Dickens in episode 3. Excuse me. In series 1. And now we've got Queen Victoria. Why not? Let's up the stakes. This way, I tend to use the titles kicked in and I thought, is this a Gatiss episode? I'm sniffing a bit of Gatiss here. But no, it was Russell.
Yeah, no, I think they cast her really well because I turned to you halfway through, didn't I? And I was like, they've done a really good job of casting Victoria. And I think the way she was written as well is, like you said, is pretty good because, like, you expect her to be just kind of like this stuck up, like, I'm not doing anything to do with this, just leave me be. When in actual fact, she's really willing to kind of get stuck into, as much as she's not willing to get stuck into the sort of, as she would put it, nonsense of it all. She does get sort of stuck into the idea of the stories. And she's obviously sat at dinner with them and is like, oh, you know, tell us about these stories and whatnot. She's the whole time when she's sort of like, because for some reason I always thought that I recalled that she said the not amused line at the end as like a little bit of a, almost like a tidbit throw to Rose, kind of like, hey, yeah, look, I finally said it. You got your £10. But
it's like, yeah, I hate you both. I'm going to banish you, but also let's have a little bit of banter.
Yeah,
like, why not?
I don't know whether she actually intends it to be banterous or whether they just kind of make it seem banterous by the fact that Rose and the Doctor are like, hey, I got me £10. Because she doesn't smirk or anything, like, at all. But you almost get the flash of laughter behind her eyes that says, like, yeah, I'm saying this because you've been trying to get me to say it.
I'm trying to think of the order of that. I know we've literally just watched it, but, like, does she say, I am not amused? They do their thing, and then she says, I banish you. I think she does.
No, so she says... So I think what happens is she knights them both. They stand up, and then she says... and now I banish you. And then they're like, wait, what? And then she goes, and I am not amused, not in the slightest. And then Rose sort of turns and is like, oh my God, yeah. And then she's like, she goes on that spiel about how, you know, they enjoy everything too much and how they sort of question, she questions how long they can live in this thing. I'm not sure. I can't quite remember.
I have just double checked very quickly there and she says, I'm not amused. And then she says, I banished you.
Right.
So maybe there is like an essence of banter there, but maybe, just maybe, she was trying, that she was testing them, like a trial of character.
Yeah, so she
to see if in the heat of everything, they would just drop everything and take, like, and just not make things seriously. Like, she's seen them take things like really seriously. There are deaths on the line that she sees the Doctor switch back into, I'm not going to take the piss anymore mode. Mm-hmm. And she goes, okay, how like usable
serious
will you be to the Empire? Like, how beneficial would you be? Are you just going to be jesters about the whole thing? And she, because she says, like, you gallivant about the stars and think it's fun,
mm-hmm.
or you gallivant around in danger and think it's fun. Like, you're almost too unhinged. And I feel like that thing, the thing that they've been playing up on this entire time, Rose has been constantly trying to get to say, which obviously she does read that as, I know you're trying to make me say it. Stop it.
Of course she does. I mean, she says it like 3 times in the space of like 2 minutes right at the beginning of the episode. Oh, you're
I'm thankful they don't lean into it too much.
Yeah.
Because that would have gotten really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it gets ignored for like a really good big chunk and then that reaction.
Yeah, you kind of forget
Rose,
about it, don't you?
That yes is like so good. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was a judge of character. Maybe she did that to see how they would react to that finally happening. And then if she sees them go like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's almost like you're at school and you're pissing about in class and you try not to let the teacher see you, even though you're kind of like, oh yeah, I didn't know what she catches me. Screw it. I'm implying female teacher. I'm thinking about year six and my year six teacher. And then you do get caught and you're like, oh, I'm sorry. Borderline crying.
Yeah.
It's like maybe she was hoping for that kind of response. Maybe what if the Doctor and Rose did sort of go, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, like really like, do you think she would have maybe gone, okay.
No.
Don't do it again.
No.
Slapped wrists.
I think the way she turns on them was like, she was fully kind of like intending to do that from a good point through. Because like, yes, they saved her life and yes, they were like thingy. But the whole time she was observing them. And especially when they were trapped in that room in the middle of the house before the werewolf comes through the ceiling. They were turning to each other, weren't they? And Rose was like, but werewolf? And he was like, I know. And I think, like,
yeah,
there was no way that she... Because she, you could see her in the background, like, watching them. And she was like, oh, you know, what about you, Doctor, with your accents changing and the fact that you seem to be, like, thriving on all of this, like, activity and whatnot. And yeah, so I don't think she would have considered it any different. I don't think she would have turned around and sort of said, like, okay, no. Because obviously that then leads to the plot of, spoilers, Queen Victoria creating Torchwood.
Yeah. It's a hypothetical, because obviously, as you're right, the linear events of this, or the fixed point that this happens, that Torchwood begins, was going to stay fixed. So it wouldn't have changed. But I'm just thinking, like, whether there was that, as you say, you see that sort of humor behind her eyes.
Mm.
Like, you see there is this very like stern exterior, but yeah, you see this like this inquisitive, curious nature to the Queen, hence why she leans so much into, I want to hear ghost stories.
I mean,
hear stories of this wolf thing.
I think it is a lot to do with, like she said, her husband and the fact that he was like so invested in everything, and obviously as
sort of
we
opened
know,
her eyes to it, and it's like a link back to him for
yeah.
her, and obviously that becomes a lot more tangible and a lot more physical than I think she ever realizes, because obviously the doings of her husband and Lord Watsit's father,
Lord Watsit's father,
sorry, Sir Robert's father, they actually do lead to her being saved,
mm-hmm.
but from this werewolf that. Eventually, obviously, the story just evolves into, let's lock them all in a big spooky hoose and let a werewolf out on them.
Yeah, basically.
And I think in terms of a build-up to a spooky ghost story, I love it.
Yeah, what
because
better
it is
way
literally
to
just,
sort of...
It's just a case of, hey, we're in a big old Scottish house in the Highlands.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just close you in, give the bald guys guns, and then, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
Your dog food.
Yeah, basically.
And just see how things play out. And, like, everything in that episode comes so naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't have that particular point that goes, right, here's the big thing, like, boom, there's the twist, bam, like, they've fixed it. Kind of like how New Earth was like, here's the cure.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's also very, that kind of format is very reminiscent of Moffat. It's like,
quick, here's the resolution.
Yeah, it's kind of like, mystery, 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 mystery. Oh, quick, plot, solution, done. And it's kind of like,
I'm gonna quickly Google this to make sure that my terminology is correct.
Right.
But is that what is referred to as a deus ex machina?
I have no idea.
Yeah. It's a plot device whereby a seemingly unsolvable problem in a story is suddenly and abruptly resolved by an unexpected and unlikely occurrence.
Right, okay.
I thought that... I'm pretty certain that was what it was said, but I don't want to make myself sound stupid to all of the English graduates out there.
Lol. I wouldn't have even known that term, so...
But yeah, deus ex machina.
Okay,
like,
so...
It's something that Mr. Moff does enjoy,
yeah.
And I'm dreading watching Cold War again in Series 7.
Mm, is that
dreading
the one...
watching Series 7
yeah,
at all?
Yeah, I know the one.
The Ice Warrior on the submarine.
Yeah. Anyway... Yeah, it's something that I feel, like you said, it flows really naturally. Like, when they were trapped in the big room and the doctor's working out that the walls are mistletoe-coated, it doesn't come as, like, a giant solution to the problem, as, like, a sudden realisation. Almost like, you know, how, like, Matt Smith would be like, oh, I'm so clever, and then be like, you know...
Jodie Whittaker does it as well.
Yeah.
There's some stories where she just kind of goes, oh!
Yeah.
And then...
reels
boom,
off the
exposition
solution.
And
don't
then there's
wrong,
the end
like,
of the story.
I fully enjoy, like, I really like Matt Smeary's
that's another t-shirt, Matt Smeary's. My favourite doctor is the umpteenth Matt Smeary's.
I really like Matt Smith's series, to sort of like, you know, series 5, 6 whatever his earliest
five
series.
Six and seven
but I think Moffat's writing is really good at, like, in part, but, like, obviously he kind of suffers from what a lot of the showrunners suffer from, is, like, overwriting and overuse
overstuffing
ideas.
But
anyway, not the point. So I really like that scene where they're trapped in the room and the Doctor works out that everything is linked by kind of working out that there's mistletoe on the thing. But it, like you said, it happens really naturally because Rose is like, why can't I get in? And then the Doctor's like feeling around the walls, and then they're looking at the book and they realise that this thing fell to Earth, and they kind of work out where it originated from. And then
everything's laid there from, not necessarily from the beginning.
There are
certain things that are implied early on, but they do slowly, progressively give you each sort of bit of information as the story goes on.
Yeah.
As said, they don't do a deus ex machina. It's like, boom, here's the solution to everything. But they kind of, they gradually put things onto your back. They don't just go, here's a wheelbarrow full of stuff you need to try and remember and go from there.
It all falls naturally into place, and you can very easily follow the story, which is something I find with some Doctor Who episodes, is I will literally be watching the whole episode and I will not have a clue what's going on until they do the really smart monologue right at the end that explains everything, and I'm like, oh.
It's the worst feeling with Doctor Who, and not, you know, unfortunately for Chibnall's era, there's a lot of stories where you sit there and it's like, okay,
what
and
now?
It goes on and on and on and on. It's like, am I going to know now?
No.
Am I going to know now? I'm trying to think of a very... Because there's one example from series 11 or 12 that I had that feeling through the whole goddamn thing.
I think I know what you're on about, but I can't remember what episode it is.
It might. I can't remember, though, whether my reaction to the end of it was positive or negative, because I'm thinking it could be... what's it called?
I mean, we definitely know it's not Orphan 55.
It Takes You Away. It Takes You Away was one that
Which
I think
one was
fell.
That?
The frog, the Solitract. the one that ended with literally
the
like
frog.
The farting monster from Treasure Planet sits on a whoopee cushion. And it's just a big fart, a cacophony of fart
All
noises.
All you have
That's
to
what
say is
it takes
the
you away
frog,
ends with.
And I just know
frog.
Exactly what you're on about.
And you just laugh. And then the Doctor blows a kiss and walks off into the whiteness.
Into the ether.
It's like, cool, whatever. But then also Spyfall. I think Spyfall Part 1 was like, okay. And then just, oh, God.
Oh,
like,
my God.
And not even just for the twist, but just things starting to fall into place. It was like, oh, good grief. Like, that's a good thing. And as sort of mentioned earlier, Tooth and Claw is an easy episode to digest, but it still does a lot of, like, spookiness with it. I love... We were talking about while we were watching it about how you don't see masses of the werewolf. Like, because of budget. Because the CGI, as you can see, is better.
It's better
than what we've seen. It's not like incredible.
It's definitely,
but it's
palatable.
Better.
Like, you know, you can take it in and sit there, and there's
again,
no
it's
part
digestible.
Of me that
goes,
it's
not,
it's janky.
It's not series one of Once Upon a Time. I always bring that up as an example of
but
naff
if
CGI.
You've seen
but that's
series
because
one of Once Upon a Time, you get it.
Or watch any Disney Channel original movie.
Yeah, literally.
Like Halloween Town.
What was
Let's
it? Well,
go.
Yeah, I was watching Halloween Town the other day, and I was having like a proper binge of Disney Halloween.
Disney Plus
movies.
Have a Halloween playlist,
and the scene where they're riding a broomstick and they're flying away on like a bus going into the sky is just...
And it is abysmal.
It's funny, because like...
it's,
it was
yeah,
made
it's
in
a
like
1999 made-for-TV movie, so it's not going to be great.
But Halloween Town is a fantastic movie, and like, the three movies that followed it are pretty good as well, so...
Have you watched all of them?
Yeah,
though?
I watched all four.
Oh, God. But anyway, yeah, like, it's a tangible CGI, and the fact that they do give you a lot of information that's just being implied, like that scene when they shut themselves in the room in the observatory, say, is the best way to put it, and all you have the camera just slowly rotating around the characters, and all you can hear is the noise
of
the
wolf.
There's no like building suspense because they're doing enough by just having the sound of it. You can't gauge where it is. I'd love to watch that with like headphones on or with
surround
on to actually
so
hear whether
which side of the room
they
it
actually
is.
Did produce it with. I think I actually was fanning around in the Blu-ray menus after the thing was ended, and I'm pretty certain it has 5.1 surround. We don't have a 5.1 surround system in the house, so we can't test this. But it could be the case. I could try it with some headphones. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
because
I love that. I love that sequence. They play it up on like a... I was supposed to say Base Under Siege. It's not a Base Under Siege story, but it's kind of like it's just being, you know, trapped in a house with a threat.
Because I mean, we were sat eating dinner at the same time as watching the episode, and legit, it took me a lot longer to eat my dinner because during this scene, I was just sat there like completely still. I wasn't moving. I wasn't eating. I was like, what's going? Because like, it's been a long time since I've seen this episode, and despite the fact that I know, like, who gets out alive and who doesn't, throughout the episode I was like, wait what happens here, and it's kind of like I can't even remember the last time I watched it. So for me it was like I was literally just sat there and I was fully hooked into the episode, and I was just like not moving and not eating, and I was like just listening to the sounds of this wolf like scratch around the outside of this room trying to find its way in, and it just fully hooked me. And then I realized and I was like, oh, I'm not eating. Just kind of like carried on.
You heard it here first, folks. Tooth Claw managed to stop Amy eating.
Hey.
That is how good it is.
I mean,
to be honest, like, going back to it now, and like as I said before, like we're watching these in a slightly more critical sense now that we're gonna spend an hour talking about it.
Yeah.
I think Tooth and Claw is close
there
to being like an almost immaculate story, because there is something that was brought up. I did it in a list not long ago, and we were talking about it as well. The observatory being having all of the wood varnished with mistletoe, it does lead to a plot hole where
that wasn't the observatory. That was just the room in the middle, because the observatory is the one with the telescope in it.
That's what I mean.
No, because you were just saying about the walls being varnished with mistletoe. That wasn't the observatory.
Was it not?
No, that was they were in the library.
That was just
the
library.
They?
Oh, okay. Maybe, okay. I don't know. Anyway.
No, they're in the library.
The walls are varnished with mistletoe, and the wolf can't get in, so it climbs up on the roof and comes in through the skylight, but then the wolf can still get out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, the idea of, oh, wait, you know, the doors might not have been closed, and it looks like the doctor tries to close them but may not get to them in time. I don't know.
Yeah, because I turned to you and I like, went, yeah, but surely if you just shut it in the room, it won't be able to get out.
It won't be able to get out. But then it's like, also, when it came into the kitchens, where the lady of the manor was, it could barely even walk into the kitchen, just being in the vicinity. So the idea that it could like walk through a doorway shaped hole in something surrounded by mistletoe just doesn't seem to really work. So that's one little plot hole, and to be honest, it's kind of nitpicky, because I feel like if the flow of the episode went into we need to go to the library to start learning answers, and we get the shot of David Tennant putting his glasses on, just gonna bring that up again for the sake of our collective you know,
vaginal muscles.
Like he would have written. I wasn't going to be so blunt with that. That it would almost like he'd written himself into a corner. So it's kind of like, I can let it slide. It's the one thing that I could really like. You could really, really pick on.
Mm.
But in the grand scheme of things, does it completely ruin where the episode goes? Does it ruin the payoff of this isn't a telescope? It's a light reflector, and the Kohinoor is the means of defense against this wolf, against this being that the Queen's husband and Sir Robert's dad have been, you know, researching all these years. Like, no, it doesn't. So,
no. And
you know,
I mean, the thing is, I feel like,
yes, it's a plot hole. Do I care? No.
Nah. I said to you as well, didn't I? I feel like it might have been like the strength of the stuff, because obviously in the kitchens it was all fresh. It was all like the real
it would have been
plant,
almost emitting
like,
that scent, whereas that stuff
since
would have been
the
old.
Monks had been in there cooking up the stuff for the people to part the guards to all pass out. So I feel like that kind of, it's like when you smell fresh herbs versus like dried herbs. It's like the fresh herbs will always be more like pungent and more like, you know tangible than the dried stuff. And so I feel like him walking into the kitchen and not being able to be there is because the kitchen would have been full of fresh mistletoe, whereas that's hence why he wasn't attacking the guards either. Whereas going into that room and being able to come out of it, if it's just varnished on the wood, it means he wouldn't have been able to get like right, like he was still able to get right up to the wood, as you saw in that scene with David looking down the wall, like the doctor on one side and the wolf on the other. So he was still able to like get up to it, he just wasn't able to kind of like touch it or break in, I guess. So I think the thing of him like getting out the door, it kind of, because it wasn't closed, he was probably able to just kind of like rip past it. So I feel like it's explainable, like it's not a huge plot hole that you think, oh god, like if they'd have actually shut him in the room, and like locked the door from the other side, then yes, it would.
And
have
it was
been
very
different.
Blatantly, he broke through the door. Yeah. Then it's like, yeah, that would make a lot more sense for it to be like a. That doesn't really work.
Also, just as a point, you know, it can't be the observatory; it has to be the library because he breaks through the door into the observatory, doesn't he?
True. That's a good. Actually, that's a good point.
Yeah.
good point.
But anyway, so yeah, I feel like that plot hole isn't really big.
There's not much to criticize.
To...
I think it's kind of overlooked because no one really talks about it, which is a shame because, as I said, it's a really strong story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really sort
the
of say, like, what's your favourite episode from Series 2? And no one ever goes, like, Tooth
and
Claw.
No one ever says Tooth and Claw. Like, the character work is interesting. You get more so from the Queen, which at the end of the day is the important character to really have characterised. Sir Robert, not so much. Like, you know...
He's
you
hot
don't
as
really...
well. Just, like, to point out.
You don't really feel much for him when he gives himself up to the wolf.
I don't know. I feel like I felt a lot more for him than I did for Benny. But
you weren't meant at all to feel for Benny. That was a complete like misfire.
But like I think actually I do feel for him because at the beginning, although he's like I've sort of committed treason and whatever. He's doing it for his wife, like he's doing it to save his wife.
And the Queen.
And the Queen, obviously. So he's committed treason by lying to the Queen, but he did it for the right reasons. And so then him trying to save his wife and escape the wolf and giving himself up to it to enable the Doctor, Rose and the Queen to get like enough time to defeat it, I do feel for him. I do feel like I get to know him enough in this episode to actually care for what happens to him. It's definitely much more than the soldier who sacrifices himself, because obviously you don't really know him, so it's just kind of like, okay, sure, great. But I don't know, I would say that I feel for him enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more that he's not the kind of character you'd like ball for.
Oh no, not like. But then again, he's only in like.
That's more what
episode.
I meant. I didn't mean like, oh, I don't care about him.
Oh
at
no,
all.
No, no.
Like
I
he is
yeah.
an interesting enough character, but it's not like say if we got to know somebody and got to appreciate a character as much as the Queen, and then they were killed off. It's like, oh, that'd be a bit different. Mm. But I really, like I said, I really enjoy this episode. But there actually, I say there's one thing to criticize. This has just come back to me. We can criticize the wolf being able to bash through the door that was supposedly mistletoe lined. Can we also take a moment to discuss something I'm going to have to check on iPlayer and check, I would say check on my old DVD. I don't think I've got Tooth and Claw on DVD. I might do.
Oh, is this the thing that we pointed out right at the beginning?
This is something we pointed out at the beginning. If you've watched this, dear listener, recently, go back and look again, unless you already noticed this. At the point when the Queen had been introduced to the Doctor and Rose. She was still inside her carriage. There's a point when there's like a wider shot of like behind Doctor and Rose, like looking into the carriage. And there's a very, very specific
semicircle, ellipsis
over the Queen that has been brightened digitally to make sure you can see her. Because otherwise she'd be almost completely in shadow. But it's not even like they've taken a mask of some color grading and like feathered it out enough to make it not look stupid. It literally looks like a perfect ellipse around the Queen.
Yeah, literally. And
in her carriage, and it looks really, really strange.
I looked at you and I went, is that like a glitch or something? And it was there in
I had never ever noticed
neither
that.
I, in every single never. Time they pulled out to the wide shot of her in the carriage talking to them, it almost looked like they'd superimposed a lighter shot over the top of it, or that they'd like selected the ellipse around her and just really brightened it, forgot to feather it out. And it was so obvious.
I'm just looking at it right now on iPlayer, which is not the Blu-ray release, and yes, is still there.
It is still there. Okay, so it must have just been in the episode and somebody just forgot to vet it.
It's so blatant,
so
as
obvious.
Well.
So if you've watched
it's
is
awful.
It on Netflix? We'll need to check on Netflix as well.
I think the Netflix uploads are the same ones as the iPlayer ones, because they're but if you're watching series 1 to 4, which were not recorded in HD, they look abysmal.
Right.
Like they look really, really bad.
Yeah.
On iPlayer and stuff. I'm literally just going to very quickly double check now while I can open on my screen. I want to see whether this is also the case on this version. Let's have a look.
Because it was
one.
Awfully obvious. Like I turned to you and I was like, what is that? And it just is like, how did that slip everyone by? Surely someone in the editing someone got fired that day. Like, surely.
I mean, you'd hope so. Either that or we're the first people to ever notice it.
I doubt it.
I don't know.
But, I mean, if you noticed it, Lister, please let us know. If you're on YouTube, in the comments, please let us know if you saw this as well. And
annoyingly, like, skimming through Netflix is... Oh, yeah, it's there on Netflix.
Is it? All
yeah.
right, okay, so it must be
skimming through
that.
On Netflix is not as easy as iPad, but yeah,
that
it's on Netflix as well.
It must have just been how it aired, then.
It's obviously on the original version of the thing. I'll have to check my DVD version of it as well, but I think the ones on iPlayer and Netflix are the DVD rips anyway.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, that's probably the only thing I could really massively criticise is why is there some horrifically bad colour grading and really, really prominent masking. It's like you could have easily hidden that with a cheeky little feather.
Mate, I'm not being funny. You can do better than that on paint. R.I.P. paint.
That's pushing it.
It
also, paint never died. Paint's still there.
No, it is. They took it off,
yes,
didn't
it is.
They?
Nope, paint's still
I
there.
I thought they got rid of it.
Nope.
Oh. Okay, well, not R.I.P. paint then.
After we finish recording this, which is in literally like a minute, we're going to sit and play paint. We're going to draw some scribbles and then just fill in the gaps with the paint bucket tool, because that's what everyone does.
Yeah. Oh my God, we used to do that all the time.
Everyone does it.
Oh,
everyone
God.
Does it.
I need to message
if
my
you
sister
are,
about
if you,
that.
If you are now thinking, oh my God, I'm going to go on paint, then either you can send us your questions about next week's episode, which is School Reunion.
Oh, what a good episode.
Sarah Jane Smith and K-9
yes.
returning to Doctor Who, which is
yes.
awesome that they just went, do you know what, series two? Screw it.
Sarah Jane.
Let's do it. Let's get Elizabeth Sladen, the late, great Elizabeth Sladen, Woo-hoo. Back in for a fantastic episode. And Anthony Head, who, again...
Anthony Head.
Just aroused
dope.
A lot by him in general,
yeah,
but yeah.
He's the silver fox, as they are known.
He is, yes. So, yeah, send us your questions for next week, or next time, I should say.
Yeah, I was going to say, because let's be honest, it probably won't be next week on our
last
schedule.
Week we went go-karting, lol.
Yeah, we were like,
it was something
hey, we're going to try and record the podcast every week.
We were gifted this... Like, by your mum for our
mom.
Birthday back in May.
No, it was Christmas. We got the voucher
no
for
way.
Yeah, we got the voucher for Christmas.
Christmas? Mm-hmm. Oh my God. When things started to loosen up a little bit towards the end of the summer, we thought, right, we should get this booked in just in case the voucher expires.
Yeah, so the voucher
and then
originally
COVID
expired
re-kicked
in August.
But they stayed open, and thankfully, because you're wearing like a track overall, a boiler suit, and then like a balaclava which goes over your nose and mouth anyway, and then a helmet, like,
and
you're
go-karting
okay.
around a big track where you're not near anybody 90% of the time,
and if you sneeze inside your helmet, the only person who gets hit by
is
that
you.
Is you. So, and it was really fun.
It was really good fun. Just
it was really cool. That was where we were last
yeah,
week, but a good excuse.
Just as a pointer, I shaved 17
send
seconds
us your
off
questions
my laptop.
Send us your questions for School Reunion on Twitter using the hashtag #EscapingCasturbarus. The spelling is in the title of the podcast you are listening to right about now.
Because I ain't
you can tweet them, just use the hashtag,
world.
Or you can tweet them better to tweet them at WhoCulture. Again, you can probably see it on your screen right now, at WhoCulture. #EscapingCasturbarus if you want to have a question featured in next week's podcast. And also, if you're going to go to paint, please tweet us your drawings on paint. If you make them Doctor Who themed as well.
Even better.
Do it.
You can tweet them to either me or Rich individually.
Yes,
but,
or WhoCulture.
Or WhoCulture.
Where, Amy, where can they follow you on Twitter?
They can follow me at @Ames_Elizabeth, also on Instagram, because I post more on Instagram than I do on Twitter, but still not much on either.
And you can follow me on Twitter at @PickupChangeToe.
Yes.
So, yeah, Tooth and Claw, overlooked,
what
very
would you
good.
Give it out of 10?
I'd say an 8.
Yeah.
I think Tooth and Claw is really good.
I was thinking
it just doesn't
more of
get
like
the time
a,
of day.
I was thinking almost a 9, I think. Like,
really?
Yeah,
okay.
I think I don't, like you said, I don't think there's much to criticise about it, really.
True.
So
I think we'll have to see how it goes when we do our ranking of the series at the end
yeah.
of the
mm-hmm.
at the end of the series. But yeah, School Reunion next week. Until we see you again, take care of yourselves throughout all of this stuff. Wear a mask. Don't be a
pleb.
I was thinking about what I could say. I could say dickhead, could say dung beetle, could say prick. Don't be all of those things.
We'll go with pleb.
Be good, wear a mask, take care of yourself, and in turn of taking care of yourself, you're taking care of other people as well.
Take care of other people.
In the words of Andy from Hot Fuzz, don't go being a twat now. Be good, and we'll see you next week.
Well, next time.
Bye. Next time. Wait to piss on my goodbye, Amy.
Sorry.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, Amy.
Goodbye.
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 Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.